All right, this is one awesome podcast interview today. I'm talking with the Principal of the Year from 2016 for the state of Georgia and a finalist for the National Principal of the Year for 2017. He is the principal of Meadow Creek High School in Gwinnett County, Georgia, Dr. Tommy Welch. You got so much stuff that's going to set your brain on fire today. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, today I'm talking with Dr. Tommy Welch, principal of Meadow Creek High School in Gwinnett County, Georgia. He's the 2016 Georgia Principal of the Year, the 2017 finalist for National Principal of the Year. You can find him at Principal Welch on Twitter. Say hi to everyone, Tommy.
Hello.
Awesome. Glad you're with me today, Tommy. And I appreciate you making time. I've had the opportunity to hear you speak a couple times. We're colleagues. I'm glad I've gotten to know you over the years. And it's so cool. I can't say enough about all the kudos that have come your way. Congratulations on the Georgia Principal of the Year and being a finalist for the National.
Oh, well, thank you. Been a fan of yours for years as well.
No, you're too kind. awesome news for you there. This is what I want to start off with. What do you like about working with kids?
Oh, you know, there's nothing like that aha moment when you see a student learning for the first time, that glow in the eyes and that smile of something that they had a productive struggle through that they're actually getting. The other thing that I really love about students is that possibility of the unknown, meaning that a student, they're going through life discovering who they are, what they like to become, and they develop dreams, and they're coming to you with that possibility of the unknown, of not knowing how to get there, what life will become. And especially as a high school principal, you really begin to help them mold that path and that journey so that they can accomplish their dreams.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah. That's awesome. Working with kids and seeing them be able to get to that point of reaching their dreams, that's the cool stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the classroom for a minute. What do you think is one of the greatest challenges that teachers face in the classroom today?
I would say it's really increasing the rigor of the standards. You know, we have standards. Every state has standards in what you're supposed to teach. But when you talk about the depth of knowledge and the rigor that's applied, it's difficult for some teachers to learn how to ramp it up. And that is something that I've noticed has always been a challenge. Because once you reach that third or fourth year, you feel like you're comfortable with the standards, you know the pedagogy. The next step is, so how do I take each student to that highest level of the DOK? And that can be a challenge, and teachers have difficulty with it, and it looks different depending upon your teaching style. So there's anything that I would like to dig a little bit deeper in to help out with instruction would be that.
Awesome. Thank you. By the way, just to make sure that I'm following the initials right, when you said help them with the DOK, that's depth of knowledge, right?
Depth of knowledge, yes, sir.
Good stuff. I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak several times, Tommy, and one of the messages I've heard you repeat, it comes from Peter F. Drucker, yes. And it's his message around his writing called Managing Knowledge Means Managing Oneself. Could I get you to talk a little bit about this?
That's one of I love that reading by Peter Drucker. He talks a lot about the importance of not only managing yourself, but knowing yourself. And in his literature, he talks about you got to know your strengths. But not only knowing your strengths, you have to know whomever it is that you're responsible or directly reporting to. You have to know their strengths and their weaknesses as well, because in the middle management role, your responsibility is to complement them. So in managing oneself, that text gives you several tips of not only how to manage yourself as a leader, but also how to manage yourself in professional situations where you need to work with others. And I always find that very interesting when you talk about the dynamics that exist within the public school. We all work together to accomplish one common goal. So in order to do that, we have to learn how to work with each other. So in managing oneself, Peter talks a lot about how do you begin to manage yourself so that you can also work with others. And in doing that, you can lead others to accomplish the same goal. So I always find those things to be very, very, very interesting. And I share them with my staff every year to kind of put us back on the same path so that we're speaking the same language. He talks a lot in there also about a knowledge economy and what it means to operate in a knowledge setting, and that knowledge is something that exists between someone's ears and within their brain, and that they are responsible for that. So you have to empower each and every individual to own that piece of learning so they become lifelong learners. In doing that, it's not just for the teachers, it's for everyone that walks through your building, that you have that sense of respect that they have their own working body of knowledge. And it's up to us as a family or as a community to link up and find the common connection so that we can move forward as an organization.
Awesome stuff there. I you know, one of the things that when you talk about that, and I love the fact that you talk about having them read it again each year. That is an awesome tool. Do you ever have when you, like, might you do it during the middle of the year? Like if you had somebody change out in your leadership team or something like that? Do you?
Yes, as part of our onboarding process, any individual that joins the team, they receive a packet. And in the packet are several things that one should know if they're going to join the team. And I always give it to them, whether it's someone that's considering to join the team or someone that I'm onboarding. And in there, it has several items. Our instructional framework is in there, so you got to know how we actually go about business of teaching, because that's the core of what a school is about. But also in there is about the performance culture that we've built. So it has in there the components of a performance culture, and one of them is managing oneself, and that's a piece that everyone knows. This is how we do business, and I honestly think it makes people feel comfortable. There's research that says when people feel comfortable and secure, they can perform a lot better because they know what to expect. But also they know that it's a safe place. They know what's going to happen, what could possibly happen. So they most people appreciate that, and they flourish in environments like that. So I consciously try to provide that structure so that the students, the teachers, and our business partners understand, and we can begin to speak the same common language.
I love that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have to ask this. How did Drucker get introduced to you? How did you...
So I work a lot with collaboration, and that's, I believe that the only way to really move forward a large organization or a school or create school improvement is through strong collaboration. So I work a lot with business partners, and business partners have reaffirmed that, you know, executive training is essential to what you do in a school, especially if you're going to be a principal. They've introduced me to things called organizational management, which is actually a degree, which people get paid very well to do. And they introduced me to that. And through that, Drucker is one of the founders of organizational management. So through that, I've learned a lot about Peter Drucker, Deming, and I also found out that my superintendent is a huge fan of those. And that's how he's been able to create an organization and sustain leadership, is because he's built in place those mechanisms. So those things I've learned through my connection and my collaboration with business partners. It operates under a model called the total quality management model, which Deming started years and years ago from the business world.
Great stuff. You know, it's funny because some people would think that, they're from our past. And so anything in the past, you know, I'm a former history teacher. And it's like, I hate it when people tell me, oh, history's dead, man. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, they're still having a major impact.
Yes.
If you let them.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's awesome.
I think theory is great. It's a lot of it is theory. So theory provides a framework of understanding for people to operate in. The difficulty that I think that a lot of people have when they read those texts and they see that it's from someone who's of the past is they don't know how to turn the theory into action. And that's where the magic happens in leadership. A lot of people in this world are smart and people more than capable, but being able to turn the theory into actual action so that it can move forward a common goal is the difficult part. That's where the magic happens of how do you lead a large group of people? How do you begin to do that? You can know the theory, but the application is the hard. That's where the work happens. So that's where I've seen that the breakdown happen between the theory of the old and the connection of actual application right now. We're in the doer. I would say that 21st and 26th century model is we want to move before we learn, because the knowledge is there on a computer. And we don't play with it as long or as much as we should before we apply it. So we learn more through making mistakes now than we ever have in the past. So it's just a different world that we're operating in, and you have to create those safe places for your 21st or 22nd century learners to do that, because that's how they've grown up. So when you talk about millennials, when I hire people, I intentionally create that sandbox or safe place for them, because I know that's how they learn. They're not going to read the book. They want to do the book and learn from doing the book, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. And that's magic, what you just shared, because mm-hmm. it's all about that taking the theory and making it happen, because it's not going to do anything without you doing that. And all I got to ask you is, so when's your book coming? Because that was magic, what you just said, man.
I need help writing it. You got to know your strengths and your weaknesses. I love the talk-to-text options that apps provide, because I can write, but it's not something that I enjoy.
Gotcha. Well, that was magic what you just said, because that's exactly, you know, for all those leaders listening out there, I mean, you got to take the theory and put it into action. You got to do something with it. It doesn't just happen.
Yes.
So good stuff. So let's talk a little bit about school culture, because kind of where we were going, and I heard you going with what we just, with where all that was happening, was creating this environment in which people could work and achieve their goals and so forth. You know, in talking about school culture, how can this make or break a school?
Yeah. You know, a school is just a building without the people. So in order to have the culture function at a high level, you have to have a strong connection with the people who are actually doing the work. So I believe that in order to really improve your culture, you have to build strong mechanisms for connections vertically with everyone in the building, meaning that there's communication that flows up and down, and there are mechanisms for it to happen. It doesn't happen by accident, meaning that it's a part of your formal structure that you have in the environment, and anyone can plug into it when they need it to. Whether it's a complaint or a celebration, they know that there's a way to communicate in your building. I think that's a strong piece of culture. In the research that Drucker has, he talks about knowledge exists at the bottom, typically, of an organization, meaning the knowledge of the organization, how things actually get done, happens with the people that are typically always doing the work. And those, if you look at a hierarchy structure, a typical hierarchy structure, those are the people at the bottom. So in order for a true strong culture to happen, there has to be a seamless connection between the people who are doing the work and those who are leading the work. And that's where I feel that's the way you have to improve a culture. And that's the only way it can really be a vibrant culture. When you hear people talk about they love where they work, they love, you know, they love the environment, it's because it's how those that lead make them feel. And it's typically because they make them feel a part of the journey and a part of the celebrations. Well, you can't be a part of the journey and you can't be a part of the celebration if you don't know what's going on and you haven't been a part of the problem as it existed in improving the situation. Once you build that connection, people are more likely to be involved. I'm going to leave you with one other tidbit of culture. You know, the businesses that have the best culture, and I've learned this, is they create an environment where their employees are vested. So they give their employees stock purchases in the company so they become more vested in the work that they're doing. So when you build a school culture, obviously we can't purchase stock, right? So how do you create an environment where your faculty and staff, custodians, S&P workers, bus drivers, business partners, mothers and fathers feel vested in the success that happens? Meaning it's not just that school, our school. This is something that I helped create and birth. So they have to be involved in the process from the beginning. And that's how they become vested. So as you see, I like to bring in business examples. But that's the key, I think, to the success that I've had is creating environments where people truly feel vested and they now feel like they own the school and they have just as much pride as I have in it.
I love that, man. That is so powerful because that's that key right there is, you know, wanting, you know, they take ownership for it. There's no thought that that's not my job. I'm not going to do that. Instead, it's all the other thing. Well, let me help.
Yeah.
And that's what you're looking for. That's cool. Exactly. Good exactly. stuff. Exactly. So I'm going to use that to take this step. You know, one of the things I've heard you talk about, many people have heard Jim Collins in Good to Great talk about the idea of having the right people on the bus and in the right seat on the bus. And what I'd like you to do is talk about that concept of having the right people in the seats on the bus. Can you do that for a little bit?
Well, in order to put them in the right seat, you know, one, I'll just say that it's very important to put the right people in the right seat. There's nothing like going into an organization or a school and having a talent, and then you're sitting in a spot that is not really working for you, meaning that it makes you feel really uncomfortable all the time because it's not pulling on your skills or your gifts. You know, there's research that says if you focus on any individual's strengths, they're more likely to be successful. You know, in the classroom, we call it the growth mindset, right? If you're looking at the business model or leadership, there's a book called Strength Finder that focuses on knowing your strengths and growing upon those. But also, it's also mentally draining and physically draining to focus on your weaknesses than it is on your strengths. So if you put a person in the wrong seat of the bus on the bus and it's not catered to their strengths and only to their weaknesses, you set the person up to fail, because not only will they not be able to perform well, they're going to focus on their weaknesses, which is mentally draining, physically draining, which will eventually lead to a burnt out employee, which leads to you turning over your faculty and staff. So I think it is very important, but I also think that it's more vital that leaders understand you have to know your people. You have to know their strengths and their weaknesses before you put them in a position. So that means that hiring is vital. When you hire, you have to know who you're hiring. If you've never seen them teach, that's a problem. You don't know their strengths and their weaknesses. I'm pretty sure you wouldn't want a doctor to operate on you the first time. You want to see you want to know that someone has seen them operate before and it's been graded pretty well. Also, you know, you want to give them some sort of test. I do strength finders. I want to know what, one, they think their strengths are, but also what does the research say that your strengths are? And then as a team, that you should want to share what your strengths are as well, so that they can begin to communicate and understand how they think as individuals and as leaders. That has really helped us move forward. But also it's important when you hire to not only hire for one strength. You have to know your staff. If you know that your staff is heavy weighted on one area, if everyone's innovation, then who's actually doing the work? Like, who's the person that likes the, you know, the black and white and likes to have dates and goals? If everyone's innovating, then who's actually making sure that we get this stuff done on time? I mean, everyone has a place. And I think it's important to create a culture that you search for the talent for what you need, but also you make everyone feel comfortable in their talent, that whatever your strength is, that's your gift to this organization. I don't want you to be like me. I don't want you to be like the person next to you. I just want you to be the best version of you. So when I talk to my teachers, I flat out let them know I'm not the smartest person in the room, never claimed to be, but I hired every person in this room because collectively, when we come together, we make a very solid organization. So I do need your expertise. I will come to you and say, I don't know that, but that's why you're here. And I empower you through your strength to do what we've hired you to do and do it extremely well and try to be the best on this earth at it. And I think that makes people feel valued, right? It makes them feel accountable. The type of accountability is the value of knowing that you have a sense of belonging. And if you look at research, when it says why people remain in certain organizations, it's because of those reasons. Feel valued, you know, that they know that they have a certain level of accountability, but they're valued in an organization. So that's what I try to do to make sure that people are on the right seat, on the right seat on the bus, and that the bus is moving forward. I think that's a very important portion. But I like to also add this point about when you know yourself as a leader. I think it's also important to ask yourself, are you in the right seat on the bus? Because if you yourself are not in the right seat on the bus and you're the driver, you could be disrupting the entire function of the organization. So you have to know yourself and ask yourself, are you in the right seat on the bus? And what I mean by that are, if your focus and your organization changes from year to year, you can't sit in the same seat on the bus. You have to move. So it may be a certain point where you don't need to be in the driver's seat. You need to be in the subject area team meetings. There may be a point where you don't need to be in the subject area team meetings. You need to make sure you get down to the booster club meetings. You got to know where the right seat is at that particular year or that particular day for your bus. And that is the dichotomy of a principal or a school leader. Your seat changes each and every day, and you need to make sure you know which seat to be in and which hat to wear on what particular day, and be comfortable enough in your role to allow someone else to take the front seat and lead the bus while you're taking care of things that need to be taken care of.
Wow. I got to tell you, Tony, that is such magical. The word, what you've just talked about is so right on tune with what, you know, every leader who's listening to this needs to, you know, take time to re-listen to that section several times, because that's in an essence what you're trying to do is, you know, just recognize, because when people are out of their strengths, I mean, you're so right. When people are out of their strength area, then they're going to stumble and they're going to fail. And sometimes then that means that they might overcompensate. So they start creating drama where it doesn't need to be. And it's only because they don't need to be doing it. You know, like in a high school, if you have someone dealing with, like, the principal who shouldn't be doing the schedule, then that's probably a huge mistake, you know, or you have somebody who they're too global. They're too, they're not the right, they don't see everything. They're not all the ducks in a row and the I's dotted and the T's crossed person. So you don't want them doing the schedule, you know, that type of thing. There's so many different roles that we get involved in that we've got to recognize that. Otherwise we can create just mass hysteria in our buildings. Maybe not mass hysteria, but we can create some serious problems. Yes. That's just trouble coming. So good stuff. I thank you for sharing that. That's so powerful. And I want to use that to get to this thought, because I've heard you say this. It's not enough to show up early and leave late. Share some more with that.
You know, as a leader, sometimes you think that you got to be the first one in the building. You got to be the last one to leave. But I really think it's what you do in the time while the students and the teachers are there, which is the most important. I think when you get a little seasoned in the job, you realize the reason why you come in early is because you want to get done the paperwork so that when the students get off the bus, you can spend the time with them. And you stay late so that you can finish up the paperwork and return telephone calls, but it's because you maximize the time in the building with the people who actually get the work done or who are benefiting from the work. So as you're supporting those who teach and learn, I think that you want to make sure that it's not good enough just to be the first one in and the last one out, but maximizing the time that everyone has in the building to be successful. And that looks different from school to school. But the main thing that I've learned is that it's all about, are you supporting those people in the building? And teaching and learning is the main thing. And the teachers teach, and the students are responsible for learning. Everyone else is there to support. So throughout that day, are you in everything that you're doing supporting them to accomplish their goals, or are you getting in the way? So with that time that they're there, which is typically 6 hours in a day, are you in every classroom? Are you meeting with the teachers? Are you spending that time with them, or are you spending more time creating things for them to do? So I think that it's not important just to, you know, get there early and leave late. It's to make sure that you maximize the time during the day to spend with the people who are holding the vast amount of the knowledge and doing the work.
Awesome. One of the things, and it's come through in a couple times where you've talked and you're mentioning working with people within your building and such, as well as outside partnerships with community members and such. One of the things that I've heard you focus on is this idea that it's so important to build coalitions in your school. Could you get more specific about what you mean by that when you say that?
So the school that I'm responsible for is over 3,000 students. The cluster we have is 6 elementary schools, 2 middle schools. Total student population of the entire cluster is 13,000 students. So Obviously, the work can't be done by one person. And to build those coalitions, if you talk about John Cotter's work of creating change, that's where that comes from. Throwing another word, another research article out there for you. But John Cotter does a lot of work on creating change. And the second step of creating change is building strong coalitions, because the strong coalitions of people help move and communicate the work that's being done. So when I create coalitions, I create them for mainly two reasons: to work on the work that needs to be done. They actually evaluate the problem, determine what the next steps will be, determine what the assessment will be for those steps. And all they want from me is really to hold them accountable and give them the resources so that they can actually do those things. The second thing is communication. Because when you're dealing with the knowledge base that we have, and we're dealing with knowledge organizations, just having a position of power is not enough to move people. They have to know that you're actually connected to the work. And what better way to validate the work than to have the people who are actually doing the work work on the problem and then present the solution? So each one of those coalitions, they present the solutions to the faculty and staff, to the community, to the business partners, and they build a stronger coalition and creates more momentum to accomplish the goal. But also, the other thing is with accountability. People love to be held accountable for things that they want to do. So when they created the plan, they love to be held accountable because they want to be successful at something they created. So when it comes to accountability in the building, accountability isn't seen as a negative thing. People see it as an opportunity to show that you can do something very well, and they want it. They want to have the opportunity at the end to shine. So in those coalitions, they're really kind of support groups for a common goal. But something I think is unique that I do with my support groups or my coalitions is we have in place three checkpoints, and they present out to the faculty and staff or the community. So I really have aligned it with sort of the State of the Union type of dresses that go out for the nation and then different organizations. And they do it very similar to that. They have to do a state of their coalition. So one of them we have is culture and climate. They report out on what they said they were going to do, how they're doing thus far, what changes they need to make, and what additional resources they might need as a school. The other thing that I think is important that I do is I celebrate them. At the end of each year, if you've met your performance measurements, you get up in front of the faculty and staff, and of course you get to present, but we celebrate the wins of the year that your organization, your coalition has had. And you want to talk about building an environment where people feel connected, invested. They say things like, "We did that, I did that, I helped lead that." And I'm just in the background supporting. But of course, you know, as the leader, people always say that leader, it starts at the top. You have to set up those organizational mechanisms. And it's true. It did take some time for those mechanisms to be in place. But those coalitions now function very strongly.
Would you agree that one aspect of a principal's role in the building is connecting with parents and community members? And what ideas do you have about doing this? Now, we've heard a little bit about that, but how do you actually make that happen?
Yeah. Now, I would say that's probably the hardest thing as a principal, is because you know how to deal with the teachers and the students because they're there with you every day. But the parents, how do you fold them into what's taking place in the building and make them feel like they're vested as well? Because you're dealing with their children, so obviously you know that they're vested, but how do you get them involved in the day-to-day work? And then the business partners, you know, that's always been something that you know that they should cut checks and they should help out financially, but how do you get them to work on the day-to-day operations of your school? And is that even appropriate? And what I've found is that more and more is being asked of educators as the years have gone by. And in order to lift the heavy load, we can't do it alone. So I know that there are several people in the community who are vested in education. So I just thought that what happened if we just started to develop this plan together? So the typical parent involvement that you see is not one that I would say is an average participation in a school at Meadow Creek High School. So you have your PTSA, you know, you have your local school council, and you have your booster clubs. You have your individuals who are vested and who will always be vested, but how do you make them a vital part of the organization? So what we started to do was we really began to work with our business partners and our parents and keeping them involved in the process from the beginning to the end. And that was difficult at first because they have jobs and lives outside of the school. They don't want to be at the school 24/7. It's not their job to do that. How do you keep them connected? So some things that we've done is that we worked with a couple of external business partners, and we realized that we had a large group of working families, large group of single parent households that didn't have the time. So we worked with United Way, and we created a program where they would develop action plans of things that they wanted to improve at the school. So they became vested, and this was a program where the parents came and said, "We want to fix this at the school." Of course, I showed them what my local school plan for improvement was, and they began to pick things off of there. And they said, "This is what they want to be responsible for." So when they came to the meetings, it was kind of selfish. They said, "This is what I want to fix at the school. I'm sick of it. I want to fix this." And I empowered them to do it. Things like we didn't have lights outside. It was dark. Students got to school early. I believe the first bus lets off around 7, 10 a.m. It was dark. And the students said, "We're sick of it. There's no reason why there shouldn't be lights on the street." But they didn't know how to fix it. They thought they needed to come to the school and complain. Well, I'm glad you came to the school. Let's develop a plan to fix it. So along with the help of United Way, we begin to invite in the business partners who could help them fix their plans. And one of them was for this this particular plan was to invite in the county mayors. And they came in to listen what some of their concerns were. And what I begin to realize is that the parents needed education as well. They needed a mechanism of how to repair, fix, improve their community or the education that their students were receiving. They just needed to know how. And what United Way helped us do was to create a plan with the parents so that they had a vested interest not only in the school and in the community. Well, through that work, they got lights put up. And it was within 10 months, lights were installed, and students were able to walk comfortably back and forth from school to home. Other things that are done, we've never had visitor stands at our school. We're getting visitor stands installed now at our school because of the parent involvement. Another thing that we've done is we allow the parents to come in during the day, but not just come in to, you know, sit at the front desk or answer phones. They actually got to pick which department they would like to help in. What that means is if they felt that there was a breakdown in communication, they would sit down with our head clerk and work on the communication and work with other parents to test it. Because the parents come with skills as well. And that's that part of, you know, showing that you value the person. So parents came with skills of how to communicate, or at least how they would like to be communicated with. So they were able to bring to the table a solution to a problem without, you know, coming to the table yelling and screaming, but coming to the table with, "We have a problem, help us figure out how to fix it." So that program that we did for our parents, we do a half of year program. So by the end of a semester, their goal, the wish is that their goal is completed. That program we actually attached with one of our business partners who gave them financial incentives for completing their program. So the parents that came and completed actually received the financial incentive to do so. Now, we didn't create the program for that to happen, but because we worked with the business partners who saw that this is actually working, we can create more voters in the community, more vested leaders in the community that now can have a voice and who we can call on, we want to incentivize this. And the reason why they needed that is because in the business community, their real estate goes up, even commercial real estate goes up, based upon the function of the environment that they exist in. So they know that the community was lacking leaders. And what we began to create was an incubator of parent leaders, and they wanted in on that. So that was a way that we began to engage the parents and the business partners together. But our parents stay in our building from beginning to the end of day. They work hand in hand with the students to learn some of the things that they're learning throughout the day. Our culinary arts team put on a healthy cooking seminar where our parents came in to learn and volunteer because they wanted to learn how to cook more healthy for their children and for their family. So it's a communication method, but also a way that we communicate seamlessly. I'm going to finish with the business partners because that was something that we really spent a lot of time on. Our engagement with our business partners is simply not just a conversation. I realized in year two of my principalship that it was important to engage with people in their space before you invite them to yours. No different than dating. How often do you go on a first date to the person's house? It's kind of awkward if you do. So when you're dating someone, you typically meet them in a neutral setting, in a non-threatening setting for both of you. The same thing with business partners. It's threatening to them when you invite them to your home in an environment that they've never operated in. Most of them probably haven't been to school in 12, 13 years. School's totally changed. They're a little taken back. Matter of fact, it's pretty distracting for them. But they have a world that they operate in. So I learned that I needed to engage them first in a neutral place, a common ground. So I had to become members of Chambers of Commerce. I became members of country clubs that I did not really want to become members of, but I learned that that is the space that they operate in, and they have those informal conversations that turn into business deals later. So as I began to operate in that space, all the businesses became very comfortable with me, but I learned the language that they speak. So I learned that business partners operate on return of investments. And if they can't see the return of their investment when they come in your school, it's simply just a gift. And there's not going to be a long relationship. So I learned to create MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, where with business partners, we sat down before we engaged in this relationship with a business partner of what are your measurable outcomes that you would like to achieve as a business partner? And what are mine? And how can we marry the two and accomplish a common goal throughout the end of the year so that when you go back to your business, you can have your goals accomplished and we can have ours? But also that creates a longer lasting relationship, because if they know that they can get those measurements or metrics from your school or your organization because you all are moving together to accomplish the same goal, they'll build into their budget year after year opportunities for you to receive funding so that they can in turn receive the measurements that they need as well. Every employer has employees and they want highly qualified employees. So they look to now Meadow Creek High School as a pipeline. We just don't have regional pipelines now. We have national pipelines. There are people that fly in from Washington, not Washington, D.C., Washington, to see Meadow Creek High School so that they can create a pipeline to their business because they understood that this principal is operating with a business framework and we can talk business with this person and not worry that they're going to write something down on a sheet of paper and say, we now have a business agreement. They realize that we're actually going to create metrics and give you a return on your investment if we can, if it's the best interest of students.
That is so powerful. What you've just done is you've given just an incredible place to look at getting to for someone who's coming into the building and saying, you know, I got to figure out how to make connections in the community. Well, you know, as you're listening to this, you got to say to yourself, Tommy's just giving you the ability, you know, some really good tools to start that direction that you want to go in and giving you the idea of where it'll get you to. Because being able to sit down then, I mean, the idea of people coming in from, you know, headquarters to come visit your kids, that is so amazing. And that's real partnership there.
Yes.
Because, you know, businesses get afraid that too much of the time, you know, too often what happens is schools want them to write a check. And it's got to go way beyond any thought beyond that.
My golden rule is never ask for money. Never ask for money. You know, the knowledge that they have is more valuable than the money that they can give you, and it'll make a greater impact on the student's learning. So the goal is really to increase student learning, and the goal is to make sure that there's a connection between the learning and real life. And when you have the business partners involved, they bring that to the table for your students. So you rather have the knowledge than the money. And once the knowledge comes, the heart will follow, and then the money will come. And that's how you ensure that you create an environment at your school where, yeah, they make contributions monetarily, but let's be honest, that's not really what you want. You want the knowledge that they bring. How many teachers were trained in how to build a computer and run a computer and do this this thing that they call, what is it? It's called information technology. How many of our teachers actually have operated in a business like that? Not many of them. So they may teach coding, but they may have never worked in a coding industry before. So you need the business partner to transfer that from the book, from the classroom, to the knowledge that they'll actually need and how to do it. And then out of that, you'll get several things like internships for your students, jobs for your students. You'll get externships for your teachers where they can actually go out and learn more about what they're teaching and how things are happening. You know, there's a lot of things that can come out of it. So I would definitely say golden rule, don't ask for money. Don't ask for money. Ask for time. Ask for time.
Excellent. Excellent. This has been incredible talking with you today, Tommy. I've got three last questions, and they're more about you giving advice and something personal that I'm going to ask in the end. But if you would, what I'd like to do before that, though, is first of all, I want to share again your Twitter handles. That's all right.
Yes, yeah.
At Principal Welch, right?
Yes, at Principal Welch.
And I'll have that in the show note link, so you don't have to, you know, drive your car off the road or whatever. You know, I'll have that in there so you can reach out to them. Do you have a favorite book or something else that I could link to that you'd like to share with them?
My favorite book. Well, it's a book that really brought me into leadership, and it's called Savage Inequalities by Jonathan Kozol. It's an old book. But the reason why it's one of my favorite books is why I'm in the work is to really become the equalizer or create an environment where no matter what your zip code is, no matter how much money you make, you can still achieve the American dream. And in Jonathan Kozol's book, he laid out the framework of how American education sometimes can, by the structure, can create those inequalities. But great leaders can change that. And that's why I do what I do. So that's one of my favorite books. If anyone wanted to understand why I do what I do, that book changed my life.
And I'll make sure that's linked in the show notes as well. Thank you. So here are the last questions that I have for you. If you had a chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who have not started teaching yet, what one piece of advice would you give them?
Plan for success. If you haven't started teaching yet, I would say plan for success. And what I mean by that is before you enter the classroom, know what you're going to do and kind of role play it before it happens. Never be prepared for any situation, every situation that's going to happen. But I would say that you definitely want to have a plan of what's going to take place. And the plan should always be linked to standards. But you want to make sure you have sound pedagogy that you're going to use and try to execute it as best as possible. But I remember when I first started teaching, I'd stay up to 3:00 in the morning planning for the next day. And of course, I overplanned. But the lesson never happened as I thought it would. But I always had comfort in knowing that there was a plan. And if I ever became too nervous or wasn't sure of something, I could go back to my notes because I had tried to think through everything. And I role played with my dog in the mirror and all that good stuff. But, you know, take your profession seriously. If you take it seriously, you know, plan for it. And I made it through my first year, staying up late and doing it. And you, as you get more season, you won't have to do that because you'll have more tools in your toolbox of pedagogy and what students are used to and what they can do. But I would say plan for success and plan for your career success as well.
Awesome advice. So let's do the same thing for principals. Brand new principals, they're getting ready to, they've just been told you're principal, all right? They've accepted the job. What's one thing you would want to share with them?
Same thing. Plan for success. You can't plan for everything, but you better have a plan. If you don't have a plan, someone's going to plan for you. So I would say that as a principal, you definitely want to make sure that you stay at least, you know, you need to stay at least a month ahead of what's going on in your building. You have a full year's plan laid out already. You should. If you don't, definitely need one. But then you want to make sure that you're following the CQI process, the continuous quality improvement process, from day to day, from week to week. You have to reflect. At the end of every day, you got to write down what happened, what you learned from that day, and then you have to make sure you make those adjustments in the next day. Your staff will appreciate that you've owned your mistakes, but you're learning from your mistakes. The worst thing is a beginning principal who's planned and is so stringent in their plans that they won't modify them when they don't work because they're not listening to their staff. They can tell that they're not reflecting and they're not making the game time adjustments that need to be made. So plan for success, but as you're doing that, make sure you're on the CQI model and that you're daily adjusting, weekly adjusting, and always stay, if not a month, at least a week ahead, meaning you should know what meetings are coming up. You should know if your staff allotment's due. You should know when the budgets are due. You should know that a faculty meeting's coming up 2 weeks later so that you can begin to build the agenda and talk to faculty and staff members to see what they want on the agenda. You know, you make sure you're ahead of the ball game. But the second thing I'll say is, I know you only asked for one thing.
That was good.
The second thing is you definitely got to take time for yourself. You get burned out very quickly. So you want to make sure that you don't take the job. You want to take your task seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. So take time for yourself. You got to get out there. If you have a family, enjoy your family. Whatever you were doing before you became principal, don't let it go, because that's going to keep you sane in the job.
Excellent advice. So here's the last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, if you were given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
I had several, and I often think about this one teacher. My coach was probably the one who really, really, really worked on me. But there was one teacher when I was in high school. When I think about high school, I wasn't your typical student. I wasn't the best student. I was an active student. I was a popular student, but I wasn't the best student. And this teacher, I can't remember his name. I know it started with a W, and he leaned over one day and I was reading a paper and he said to me, he said, you know, one day I'm going to pick up a paper and you're going to be on the front. One day I'm going to pick up a magazine and you're going to be on the front. And it's going to be for something good. And he said, so I don't care what people tell you, you can't do or you won't do. He said, there's something great inside of you. And whenever you're ready to pull it out, you're going to pull it out. But I'm going to see you on a paper one day. And I remember just looking at the guy, like, this guy's crazy. Like, you know, but I, to this day, I still challenge myself that I'm going to be on that paper. So he picks it up one day, or on that magazine cover. So that when he picks it up one day, he says, I taught that kid. And he wasn't my teacher. I think he was a collab teacher, and he floated in and out of classrooms every now and then. And he just built a special connection with me and just dropped words of advice every now and then. But yeah, he wasn't my teacher.
That's even cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. It's funny, the words of help, words of advice, words of encouragement, you know, from people. You just never know what's going to impact somebody.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, I mean, you did end up on that magazine of the Principals Association,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's true. You know, Manny Scott says, you know who Manny Scott is? Manny Scott's one of the Freedom Riders.
Gotcha.
He's a world-renowned public speaker. And what he says in his speech that he says is, sometimes you have to believe in those that believe in you until you can learn to believe in yourself. So his story is about encouraging teachers to inspire students, even when they don't believe in themselves, because the words that you speak to them, sometimes they just lift themselves up because they want to believe in you because you believe in them. And as they keep doing that, they eventually end up believing in themselves. And that's his story. I hope you have a chance to check him out. YouTube of Manny Scott.
I will do that. And I will make sure there's a link in the show notes so that everybody else listening can check him out as well. Mm-hmm. Tommy, it's been awesome spending time with you today. I wish you the best in all your endeavors. Congratulations again on the kudos, because you definitely deserve them. And you're a very humble person, and you've created such a powerful environment for kids, helping them achieve their dreams. And I just wish you all the best in everything else that you do down the road, too.
Thank you, sir. It's been my pleasure.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and hosts. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends. Take care.